Hello, and welcome back to Literally Literary. If this is your first time joining us, be sure to check out our previous episodes. This episode, we are beginning our discussion on Brother Sleep by Aldo Amparan. Today, we'll be discussing an overview of the collection, as well as the first half.
All right.
Well done.
Well done, Vanessa. Do you want to get us started on this overview and first half discussion?
Yeah. So this is his debut collection, I believe. Yeah.
Who's
Aldo?
Who's Aldo?
Yes.
The sweetest. So he's a professor at UTEP for creative writing. He just got the MFA. Or not just, but he has his MFA in creative writing from UTEP as well. He's from here, from the Juarez El Paso community. I took his class at UTEP before. It was one of my last classes I took.
So can we quiz you like as we read this and like, oh yeah, so what is this here? Did you guys discuss this?
I guess we could.
I mean, he
used a lot of the styles that he like talks about in his class.
There,
so that's really interesting.
Yeah, I was talking about this with Raymond before we got here. There's a lot of attention to styles,
yes,
and structure, but also breaking them.
Yes.
Which will be fun to talk about.
Mm-hmm. He also plays with language a lot,
be fun for
which
Vanessa.
I loved. Yeah.
In this collection, you did mention it's his debut. It's also an award, right? So Alice James Books, all awards yearly. A publication of a poetry manuscript. And so Aldo won 2021. Is this 2021, right?
No, 2020.
2020.
Yes.
Alice James.
Mm-hmm. And it's being published this month.
Yes.
Yes, it says September.
Distributed, yeah.
Yes.
Well, Literarity.
Just got made their copies.
Okay. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
So it's on sale now.
Yeah, as of listening to this, you can go pick up a copy and support another local author, which is really great.
Yes, we love that.
Congratulations, Aldo. Yeah, so thank you for that little intro. We'll be asking you questions about Aldo's class and Aldo as a person throughout the podcast, I'm sure. Should we talk about the sections, like the table of contents?
Right. There's kind of, I mean, if you think about form and structure, there's five sections, but there's also a bookended by pieces that exist outside of those sections, right?
Yes.
Starting with the litany, and then, of course, the last piece too, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, a lot of these have been published elsewhere. At the City of Change was published online by the Academy of American Poets, March of 2021. And so I think we've mentioned a couple of other authors we've looked at have been published by them online. And it's a pretty cool, it's of notoriety. Alessandra also had her piece published there. So pretty good for a poet, right? To get seen by that many people. I might have also seen Imploded Vianelle published some. I mean, a lot of these are published in other places, right? That's the whole notes section.
In
there.
So what do we think of, I don't know, like overall impressions, gut reactions for these first two sections, I guess, that we'll talk about today?
There's just like so much to say that I don't know what to say. I loved it. Just reading about like here, like El Paso and like the violence in Juarez kind of, but also like family relationships, and sexuality, and just the way that he plays with the language to convey these messages. And there's so much imagery throughout.
I think immediate connections with Alessandra's book. Just because that's like fresh in my mind still.
Yeah.
And a lot of like the poems about the violence in Juarez and stuff. It just reminded me. Did you see any other connections? Like, I know we're kind of jumping ahead, but.
Right.
Because Richie and I were talking about that earlier, like before the show.
Yeah. At this point, it's our meme of the show before the show.
just, you know, how a lot of these, and it's obvious because they're placed or grouped in these sections, right? But a lot of the poems, even in these first two sections, just really go together and have lots of like underlying connections,
yeah.
You know, within the collection. So I was wondering, I don't know if you guys want to talk about that now or if you want to discuss connections to other poetry collections that we've read, other authors.
Yeah. Well, so my friend, we haven't read any of her work for this podcast, but my friend Natalie Center Sapico, I believe she gave a blurb for this, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So definitely check out Diverging Cities by Natalie Center Sapico. And that's what I was actually going to allude to. Because mm-hmm. I feel like Aldo has similar way mm-hmm. of poetically talking about the cities, their connections. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry. She just called right now. No, but on top of that, it's both who are trained in MFA, who studied, you can tell that there's a lot of attention to style and form. Then maybe in my experience, right, I do work with a lot of like community poets who maybe don't necessarily have that kind of background or training. Mm-hmm. And so there is a stark contrast in styles. And this mm-hmm. is, both of them are very, like you can tell, deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a kind of writing that you have to kind of sit with like multiple times to consider also how form affects content.
Yeah. Yeah. You can really appreciate the craft in these poems. And I had mentioned that too, how like with a lot of these, I found myself just questioning a lot of those choices that were being made. Whereas before, I wouldn't pause too much with that stuff. Like I would
questioning just, in the sense of like, well, why is this like this, right?
Right. Like, yeah. Why is this punctuation yeah. here? You know, why the use for the colons? You know, why the repetition of the number 7 or whatever? Like different things, and that I typically do question, but I don't spend too much time on.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm teaching poetry in the classroom, like I tell my students not to focus on those things
yeah.
in the beginning. Right. Because you then take away from the content, like you're saying, and from what the poem's doing as a whole. So I'm like, just wait. We'll talk about that later.
Right.
You know,
initially mm-hmm. we encourage you to just feel it out first. Like mm-hmm. a feeling, the theme, the topic, you know, just
first
experience it first
mm-hmm.
Without having to stop to analyze.
Right.
Because that comes yeah. later. Yeah.
Right. But I was doing the opposite.
It's kind of hard not to, right? If you're kind of used to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the thing that trips me out is we do have access to the advanced review, advanced reading copies. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, it's an uncorrected mm-hmm. proof. So sometimes, you know, this is kind of one of the funny things about art and poetry. Like, it could just be a typo and here we are, like, analyzing, like, oh, did you see the way this period was, like, spaced two spaces over? What does it mean? You know, maybe it's like taking an extended breath, you know, and it's just like, oh, that needed to be corrected. So yeah, that's always the thing that trips me out about when we read these.
Yeah.
And getting into that analytical mindset. It's like, wait a minute.
That's true.
But there are very obvious, like deliberate choices too, not to say that
yeah.
we would not be like dissecting it in an unworthy way. The end.
Do you want to discuss some of the themes we see?
I guess just like there's such a big emphasis on like place.
Mm-hmm.
Or like the setting.
Yes.
In a lot of them.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a lot of, it's related to, but of the body, you know?
Mm, yeah.
Body as space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I started thinking of Nas. Sleep is the cousin of death. Together, blue sky.
And here it is.
So one of the things that Raina and I were talking about is we don't really know Aldo as well. So, you know, to a certain extent, we're curious about the autobiographical elements, maybe pertaining to like loss, right? Mm-hmm. Seems like there's a lost brother here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of reckoning with.
I don't know him too personally, but yeah.
So that makes its appearance all throughout the collection, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of answer your, kind of go along with what you're asking right now, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of attention to homophobia on the border.
Like
a lot of cultural elements of how that manifests. And a lot of it's done through like memory. And a very interesting creation of, I guess, a text within a text, right? This glossary of what has not been said, right? Or
how
did you phrase it?
Glossary for what you left unsaid.
For what you left unsaid.
Yes.
So again, thinking of just about how we use language and kind of thinking about the unsaid elements of language, I think there's a very interesting creation with this glossary, right? Mm-hmm. And he breaks down terms through memories.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed those. Glossary for what you left unsaid. He has art. Give me a sec.
Gaslight.
Border cities.
Mad.
Loss. Yeah, it's really cool just to see what he's doing with these and the terms that he's choosing and how he separates them into like nouns and verbs and stuff, and he's creating his own sort of definitions, but not really. They're like you said, Richie, these memories and these like phrases that are linked to these terms and to this idea of art and loss. And
it's more of like
gaslighting.
I don't need a dictionary. This is how I've experienced it. It's like almost there's limits in language in just a clear-cut definition, but rather your experience colors it in such a unique, your own way.
Oh, and Buñal too. Mm-hmm. That's the first one. Yeah, that one I think sets us up for what these glossaries are meant to do or to evoke, right? Like this one's very specific in setting, like you guys are talking about, strong imagery, violence, strong language, those specific memories in Juarez and downtown, the Mariscal, the alleyways. It's just dark, you know, this dark definition of what Buñal means to the speaker.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and I was picking up on stuff I hadn't even realized, you know. And again, I think a good poetry collection, or I guess good reading, anything, right, will teach you as well.
Yeah.
Before we, I guess, if we do decide to dive into them, in a general sense, and I was talking about this again earlier, off the show. Man, this makes so no sense to keep referring to that, right? But even with like the first couple poems, there's this very strong sense of how he's establishing form, but kind of breaking through that form as well. And there's this strong sense of a sense of enjambment.
Yeah.
Right? And that's when, you know, an idea will continue on to the next line. And I think in a very interesting way, he'll create obstacles in a line or break it up, whether it be ending like with the period, using all sorts of different types of punctuation or line breaks or stanzas. And regardless of those stoppages, they're still connected, right? So there's an interesting sense of enjambment. Yeah. And when there's, and I think again, which again draws attention to the craft of it all, where I think the first piece that lives outside, right, of the sections, Litany with burning fields, No, when I think of litany, I just think of the repetition, the repetitiveness. And of course, I think it kind of gives us the theme for a lot of the poems we read in these sections, right? Hence, that's the litany, right? The kind of repetition of it all, linking death with sleep, reference to loss of a brother, also loss of a grandfather, which comes up as well, right? And then, of course, the way the lines are broken up, they flow into each other a lot. And where you can read it in multiple ways, right? Mm-hmm. See that. And then even in section one, starting there, I love the fact that the beginning is called endings, right? Mm-hmm. A little river run past Eve and Adam, man. So here, right, you have similar lines moving on, right? That also could be read one way. Like fragmented like that, mm-hmm. but also it's read all the way together, through a continuance of the thought. So again, I think it's so, the sense is so strong that I found myself too. Like I normally want to just kind of read it first, but since it's so strong, right? The sense of form, like, oh, why is it? Oh, this is interesting. My mind wants to stop and start analyzing right away. Why is it? Oh, why yeah. is it this way? Like, which I find fascinating.
Same. Yeah. Oh. I loved this one.
Why did you love it?
For me, what really stood out about this one was like the hunger and like the wanting. Mm-hmm. Both like in an actual like eating kind of hunger, but also like hunger for like change in your life, for like wanting something different for yourself. And I liked the way that those were kind of like both included in here.
I like that imagery. There's some really great imagery too there. Right? Mm-hmm. That I just think you have to experience reading, you know, like before sunrise, plucked from the corners of the mountain, thinking of like the way the fog sits, mm-hmm. you know, some mornings we'll have foggy mornings, and just such a surreal way of living. If especially here where we don't get that much of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like as you were talking about being so immersed in like a poem, but then also being distracted by I was writing in my book about the prepositions here, like that he starts sentences or lines with of the day of someone I'd rather keep on earth. I want, right, like all these very choppy phrases that work in this poem, but you know, when you're trying to teach poetry and in an English class and you're like, they're like, but that doesn't make sense, and you can't start a sentence with of, and it's like, well, I know,
break
but
all
in
the rules of like
poetry you kind of can, and that's what's cool about it. So but it's also, you know, supposed to distract you in the best of ways and make you think about,
and that is what good art does, right? It changes the perspective, right? Again, so here again, like the last stanza, right? Look at it, it's so chopped up in heartache or headache, the sea and the sun, for instance, the quiet nestle of clouds falling down the pits of my body. Now that's read as it's chopped up, but you read it more naturally, right? Because even the stanza continues from the previous one, again, talking about the flow, right? Or rather, a thing that doesn't end in a heartache or a headache. The sea and the sun, for instance, the quiet nestle of clouds falling down the pits of my body. So,
yeah.
That's great, you know?
Mm-hmm. My favorite lines were, I want a different ending, or rather, a thing that doesn't end.
Which I think is a very universal want, right? Lovely. And then next is, this is one of my favorites, the Abad. And we have encountered Abad before, named as such, right? Some are always hungry. Yeah, it took me a while. I'm like, we've been reading a lot of books on this show now, right? Do you remember that one?
I do remember that one.
Nice. And this is also one where I referenced that I had already read before, when it was published. Yeah, I'm referencing Summer Always Hungry by Ji-hyun Yoon. And here we have an abad, and this more of the want, right? And it's such a great discussion, I think, like of a moving of a city at change. And it's so visual that in my mind, I just envision the time lapse, right? And the way he's describing of like two new building towers and trees coming out of a parking lot, like just turning into a park. It's an interesting way to look at the passage of time. And the viewer, the voice is kind of like first person when you're experiencing it, right? It changed in fast motion, you know, like a time lapse. And that's the way I experienced this poem.
Yeah, I really enjoy the setting here. And that's what something you were talking about earlier, Vanessa, about like just setting in place being so prevalent in the collection. And we see it all over, you know, in city room, like clubs, motel rooms, pavement, old cinema, hospital room, strange road. Like I circled all of these words because of all these places that the speaker was trying to get us to think about, right? And like those changes. And it's really cool. I really enjoyed this one too.
Yeah, I like the way that you described it as a time lapse. Like you said, like you're experiencing it. So it's like living day-to-day life and like going through the city. So like all these settings are changing, but like you're still there. And like there's like a scene. I want to say there's so many scenes that like show that in movies. I'm trying to think of a specific one.
Yeah, I think it also captures this unrelenting search for like this yearning, right? And I think it captures it so well too, you know, in your wanderings, in your day to day. And I guess even the opening lines, right, kind of reference that. In this city, each door I cross in search of your room. Like, I love that. And again, of course, that leads into the next stanza so perfectly.
That's interesting. So you guys are reading it like with the emphasis on the speaker. So like when you're thinking of your scene, I'm thinking like of that scene where it's like when you were talking about it, of like a person and then the background's all blurry because everything's like moving behind them and the city is just like, you know,
visually. Yeah.
But also like the thing that stood out to me the most is the setting and the places. So for me, I'm emphasizing more on the background than on the subject or the person.
Yes.
Right. So it's an abad, right? Which is like the a morning after poem, right? A morning love song, like after a night spent with a lover, right? And that's referenced here. What is it? Just talking about bed sheets, doubling you, your maleness discharge, your hip bones sticking to my thighs. Heart still relates, which again, in reference to the body. The homoeroticism of it, right? And just, again, moving and, again, just searching through. So I'm applying it with the concept of it being an abad, right? I'm envisioning the speaker.
Yeah.
Navigating through the city of change, right? Just consistently. Becoming other things.
I get it. Speaking of time lapse, on page 20 for Inheritance, I really like how this one also feels like a time lapse, but in a very different way.
Oh, yeah, a dramatic one.
I really enjoyed the pacing in this one. It's also really focused on memory and like intimacy. This one's probably my favorite. Well, from the first two, because I haven't finished the collection, but this one's probably my favorite one, just because I really enjoyed the imagery here. I think it's beautiful and intimate and personal. And it's a different subject than the previous poems that have been a little bit more about love and loss and different things, but this one's more about like the speaker and his mother And their sort of ritual with each other. And I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah, I really like this one. What did you guys think about Inheritance?
It was a good contrast from the rest, yeah. But this one's like the speaker with their mother. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of poems throughout the collection that I noticed that reference her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's probably also why it stood out to me.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of mentions of the father, I think.
And brother.
No brother.
Mm-hmm. And grandfather.
And grandfather.
And a lover.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so this is the first one like mother. I'm like, oh, interesting.
Well, that's kind of one of the things that's I guess mirrored from the beginning of the piece to the end of the piece, with the transition where they've switched places, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. she's brushing his, you know, head, and then later he is. And again, you're talking about that time lapse, right? I just, again, the imagery of before you get to even that part, again, there's the intimacy of the body invoked, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mountain of scabs, stale rivers of spit and urine, a dust storm of dead cells, bone spreading, the tented meat of muscle and tendon. Kind of the description, right, of self, right? But I like... Mm-hmm. Again, the imagery of my heart speeding and slowing. I take my first step, ride my first bike, learn to drive a car. Like just that immediate succession of boom, boom, mm-hmm. boom, time. But then again, transforming that from car to car crash, but in this case, crashing into strangers.
Yeah.
No longer strangers, which I love that line.
I loved that whole section.
Yeah. And then it brings it back to the reversal. Now time has passed and they've switched places and
mm-hmm.
the inheritance, right? That genetics, right? The taking care of your mother now term.
Yeah, I think that's a great title because it's very loaded, right? Inheritance, something that is given to you, something that oftentimes, like, you can be proud of or you feel it's, like, your duty. I don't know. I feel like it's a loaded term, and it really works well here, especially with, like, the role reversals like you were talking about, Richie. Mm. I know you were talking about Imploded Villanelle earlier, Richie. Was it just kind of as an aside for the presence of form and then playing with form
mm-hmm.
that you were talking about?
Yeah, it's a great title too. It sounds so cool.
Mm-hmm.
VNL and again, which is a poetry form. Did you guys write any VNLs in your class when you took?
Yes. We read some.
You read some? Okay.
Yeah.
And
I'm trying to remember which one it was.
Putting you on the spot.
I know. I'm like, sorry, Aldo.
There's a couple of famous ones. Dylan Thomas. Yeah. I like Elizabeth Bishop's one art.
That's the one we read.
That's such a classic poem. Mm-hmm. I really love it. And I forget that's a VNL.
Mm-hmm.
But when researching VNL, it shows up like, oh, that's right.
My students like that one too.
Yeah. I think when I taught poetry, the poetry class at UTEP, that was also, I think that drew like really great that class discussion. The art of losing isn't hard to master. Right. But yeah, including, yeah, that one's, that's the beginning of part two, right?
Yes.
Okay. Sort of skipping a bunch here. But for the sake of time, wow, because we do have, yeah, there's a lot. But again, we did mention the glossary, what's left unsaid. There's some, I think, some interesting allusions that I think are noted upon, worth talking about. But I think there's a specific instance to a case here in El Paso of a soldier murdering a trans person, Eric, I forgot her last name. But it's mentioned in the notes. So, I mean, there's some other research or historical references as well related to maybe homophobia. Not just in Mexico, but even in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things you'll see in here.
That one's on page 9, right? Is that the one you're talking about?
One of many, but right, there is an actual note there at the beginning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even mentions other countries where you have a death penalty for people in same-sex relationships. So, mm-hmm. And this one stood out to me because it's another instance of kind of the line just blowing through set boundaries, right? Because in this case, yeah. It's numbered, right? 1, 2, mm-hmm. 3, 4. And you'd think that would be different. Each one would have like a different topic or line or theme, but they can read together. It all the way through.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very interesting way to present it to be read. And of course, there's a number of 41
mm-hmm.
invoked, which I think is great because in the next poem after that is 42. Just kind of speed running through this, I guess.
A little bit.
But encourage, and only to encourage, we've said it before, but experience them being read. That's one of the best parts, I think, about reading poetry. It's the personal experience of, like, unraveling it yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
But, Unplugged to VNL, that is the beginning of section 2, and it's just pretty much a different take on that form. And instead of being broken up into stanzas, of three-line stanzas in a quatrain. It's all like more of in a paragraph form. Mm-hmm. Again, imploded, so it's all crushed together. I don't know what you guys think about that. There's, again, some great imagery in this one. Like this idea of a universe being a whole person, and when you lose that person, you lose the whole universe, or in this case, he uses the mm-hmm. phrase like, fitting a whole universe inside an urn.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite lines was when the blood from the heart clots with the urn. I like that question too at the end where there's an address to a daughter. Right?
Yeah.
And it's just more of the imagining the future, thinking of the future, right? Who will place my picture in the altar when the whole universe exists inside an urn, right? When it's my time, when it's my turn, you know, who's going to? And I like how the picture here also invokes another poem later on. And I think it's the last one that we had in this first half. Speaking of his grandmother at night in the kitchen, hearing the grandfather in the picture. So I think that's I think it's Chacon who talks about wormholes or like how images in a collection are almost kind of even like, there's a lot of similar imagery. So they're like loopholes from one thing to the next.
Yeah.
So seeing the picture here or reading about the pictures in that poem kind of took me to this part of Imploded VNL.
As like part of the Day of the Dead celebration, commemoration, mm-hmm. I think it's important to note like the power that the personal items hold in the photographs and mm-hmm. further the souls of the of the dead, right? So when he's talking about like a whole universe fitting inside of an urn. I think it's a beautiful image, but it's also kind of him showing like how all of this is still existing after death.
Mm-hmm.
I like that it ends with the question. I love when poems end with questions. But it's a repetition also about the grain of salt expanding and contracting. Mm-hmm.
So the next piece kind of definitely echoes a lot of the other pieces we've read, mm-hmm. especially as it pertains to Juarez, sister cities.
Yeah.
Just acknowledging the violence and I think we've seen this before, the desert as a
character,
right?
Yeah.
It's gluttonous, you're in appetite. Mm-hmm. Being home to these people that have lost. And this one hits a little hard too, where I think he personalizes some stories, right?
Yeah, this one also stood mm-hmm. out to me. Obituaries for the Unnamed, because of the realness of it, like
yeah.
the femicides, the immigrant struggle, sacrifice, all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And just I guess struggling with sometimes the distance that maybe we may have reading about it or hearing about mm-hmm. it on the news. It's kind of the way it ends, right? Just
yeah.
Did I read that right?
Yeah.
Well, it's
in the last
yeah.
stanza.
Oh, yeah, listen yeah. to these again. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I loved the imagery in this one. It's just so strong.
I mean, it's brutal. Like, I mean, some of it, yeah. just think, like the transformation of like the woman, you know. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about playing around with form, you guys were talking about the gaslight. Poem, right? Glass free, what was mm-hmm. left unsaid. Mm-hmm. And again, so the form is, I don't know if we mentioned it, right? But we did allude to it, but I don't know how specific we were. But in a lot of these poems that have that similar title, glass free, what was left unsaid, and then of course you have the term, you have like any dictionary, you have the word, and then, you know, whatever word of use or usage is, right? In this case, this one's interesting, it's 3 columns. Mm-hmm. 3 separate columns, and you guys talked about the possibility of it being
palindrome.
Yes. I was thinking of, never mind. It's going to derail the conversation. Okay. Community Chang calls it a palindrome. I mean, a palomino. It's a palomino. And when it's not even, it's again, I derailed the conversation, so.
Yeah.
It's okay for me to edit out. Chop, chop.
Yeah, I had that question because this one's different from the other terms in the glossary. I don't know if that's correctly identifying that. But yeah, there's 3 columns here. And I just thought, well, you know, could this be a palindrome poem where we can read it from left to right, right to left, you know, mm-hmm. up, down, first column, second, third, second, first, I don't know. So I tried reading it and I felt like it worked. Richie didn't. No, I'm just kidding.
He disagreed.
They're lying.
Vanessa was like, yeah, it's totally a palindrome. So I felt pretty proud of myself for figuring that one out. No, I don't know. I mean, we can ask Aldo, of course, but I think it's cool. I think it's cool just, again, to see how he's playing around with form in a lot of these, and that even though they're all part of this, like, glossary, they don't all have to have the same format, and they don't. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious to see why Gaslight was done in this format, the structure.
I mean, even just our discussion, it's interesting. Gaslighting has to do with, like, what is truth and how do we, you know, misrepresent truth, and the way it's broken up. It could be read different ways, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very much a gaslighting tactic. Mm-hmm.
And here it says a noun as a verb.
And a verb, yeah.
So.
It's cool.
Yeah.
City and border, so that's also examined, and more great imagery here as well. Speaking of like lovers throughout time, like the imagery of like the blue and red lights, flickering police lights, you know,
yeah,
kind of has its presence. But you know, whenever you do have like police vehicles, emergency vehicles, it does fill up neighborhoods. It gives it an interesting presence, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even more so when it's like just part of it's you're used to it, right? It's kind of one of the things that's talked about here. And It's like the way he talks about in the first section. One of the definitions of city. Right. Look, talking about, I saw your face flash. Blue, red, blue. That was pretty nice.
I also thought it was interesting that this one is specifically for someone. Whereas the collection itself isn't necessarily dedicated to anyone.
Is that because it's an uncorrected proof and he doesn't have a dedication yet?
It might be that.
Or it might be just
it that. Might not be that.
Yeah.
So these are all that's great questions to ask if we do get him on the show. And then, since he's a local author, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't, right? So we should write these down so we don't forget. Hint, hint.
Vanessa.
I'm writing it down.
So, I don't know if you guys have anything to say about the what I say to my mother.
I like this one because of like the relatability of being in a situation like that. So the title is What I Say to My Mother After Her Father Dies is Soft. And it bleeds into the poem, which I also love when poem titles do that.
Yeah.
But I like the how should I say it? Like, it's very raw and like, here's what I wanted to say and here's what I meant to say. Mm-hmm. But it didn't come out that way because I've never been in this situation and it's awkward. And AF.
That, it's an exploration of like the, wow, why did I say that?
Yeah.
I really like the rhythm that it ends in. Mm-hmm. And the imagery of, you know, that hospital room, right? Of the monitor, the lack, the beat, the lack, the beat. Ta-da, ta-da, ta-da. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yeah.
Interesting the connection between the two on these pages, right? Because then the next one also kind of has to do with like hospital related or, you know, again, mm-hmm. MRI, but these hypotheticals. And then this one, right? You see, like, you don't see a whole lot of this in too much poetry. Because you would call it a pipe. I don't know. What do you guys call that symbol? It's like a divider, right?
Yeah.
It actually has a name. It starts with an S. I can't remember it right now.
I just call them breaks.
Breaks. Yeah, it's the vertical line. I guess it's called a Scheffer stroke. But I think that's an application more for like philosophy equations. Right, which is that straight line. I use it when I promote like open mics and stuff. I use it to make a break too, to divide like stuff. But yeah, it's a nice line. But you don't see its presence a whole lot. Mm-mm. But you use a nice scissor break here, right? And breaks. That's a couple times too throughout the collection. Okay. Why are you mad? More glossary entries.
Mm-hmm. I do see the number 7 coming up a lot in a lot of these poems.
Oh, I pick up on
I think that. Mad was my favorite one of the glossaries.
Mad.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
what,
yeah.
What is, why That's is cool. that?
It made me feel mad. Like these memories, like, I don't know. Like I read them and I was like, I'm also mad. Like this happened to the speaker. And it wasn't like something that they deserved and they're mad about it. And like kind of like the healing from trauma, like you have to get mad first.
There's a, there's a lot in it too, right? Again, all the sections that include, You mentioned seven, so that appears in this mm-hmm. one.
I want to know why 13 is blank on page 40.
Right, mm-hmm. I was looking at that. As you're saying, it's right before the apology, mm-hmm. which maybe part of the process is not
like
sharing, you know, just for yourself. Or maybe it's part of the uncorrected proof.
You have to calm down and then apologize.
Yeah, it's like be mad, allow yourself to get mad at these things, think about them, and then, you know,
like take a breath.
Take a breath. That's maybe what 13 is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take a beat and then apologize.
Take a beat. Let me use that. Someone's going to steal one of my beats. Yeah, no, that stands out too, the emptiness of mm-hmm. that 13th line.
Wow. I also liked 9. That one was good too.
Playing around with a little bit of language there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hole and hole. Italicized, right? Again, again, the form is just do so much, just shifting around like that. The next piece does that too. When I'm lost.
Mm-hmm.
It's numbered. It's like a list now. It's like an outline. Elegy with the dial-up connection was probably also one of my top in this section, the first half.
Yeah, this one was very visual. Like I felt like I was there. If that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's not as broken up as a lot of the other poems so far, right? Mm-hmm. I think it does build scenes and images a little bit more steadily, right? Including just this concept of grandmother being up at late in the kitchen and hearing his voice and his description and understanding of that. And then I guess even the ending, right, of him standing there in the darkness of the kitchen. Again, you mentioned darkness, Raina, right?
Mm.
All throughout. We haven't talked about it in the poems, mm-hmm. but yeah, it's there a lot.
Darkness, yeah. Shadows.
Shadows, darkness, right, edges. Mm. And you hear him listening for the rasp in the grandfather's voice. And seems like there's a lot there too, a lot of unresolved stuff. For sure.
Like especially with the repetition of I was not home. It comes out a couple of times.
Yeah. And that closes out the second part.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, so these come at you pretty fast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Strong, and a lot of strong connections in a lot of the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think, like we mentioned throughout the show, I think just the experience of navigating the form and how it affects the content, right, is just, you got to experience it, right?
Yeah.
And enjoy it, ultimately. Because I know we are. Maybe we're not talking, like, we're not being as analytical, but, you know, it's fun to talk about these.
Yeah. There's also just so much going on throughout each of these poems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That you do have to read them and kind of sit with them mm-hmm. for a while.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Do any of these pieces remind you of... Wait, so in your class, did you guys do more reading than writing? Or did you write as well?
It was Both.
Okay.
Yeah. We would read like two or three pieces for each class. And then we had like a weekly writing assignment.
And so would the writing be kind of centered around the stuff you read then?
Yeah, like implementing one of the techniques that they used, or he would sometimes give us a different prompt too.
Cool. Do you kind of see where I'm going with this?
Where are you going?
So quiz time. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Pop quiz.
No, just I don't know if you picked up on any techniques or poetic techniques or terms or tools that maybe you studied in your class.
Yes, actually,
show up prominently.
There's one poem that I can't remember off the top of my head. Oh my god, What was it? I can like see the book in my hands.
Really? Because I can't.
I know. It's your phone in your hand.
Vanessa, that's your phone.
Oh my gosh, what was it called? It had like...
What do you remember about it?
It was from this one collection that had a poem. I think it was called like Triptych. I'm trying to look for it. You failed.
I know, I'm doing so terribly.
Diana Khoi Nguyen. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff that, like, all of the techniques that she used, like the breaking up of the poems, was in that. I think also like the use of punctuation, and I can hear him reading it.
Yeah,
it's kind of similar to the way that like Jericho Brown reads his work, and he is also one of the other authors that has a blurb on this.
All right. Nice mentioning that.
Yeah. I know one of his favorite authors is Ocean Vuong. So I kind of see that a little bit, but not too much, I don't want to say.
Okay.
But I do see, yeah, Ocean Vuong. Yeah.
That's cool.
When I read this, it does really show the craft of poetry, you know, and the kind of stuff that I wish, like, a lot of people go to the open mics, like, there's a little bit more to it, you know, to the craft, like,
yeah.
I mean, I think...
Just, like, writing down your feelings.
So I think most, I think most people go with, like, a confessional type, which is still legitimate, but, I mean, there's more to it than that.
Yeah.
You know, which I think... If you're talking about craft, eventually you find yourself learning these things and coming across them and trying to apply them. So,
Well, a lot of people don't have that privilege to take a creative writing class at a university level.
No, but I mean, just being able to like read it, like
read it and kind of try to understand like the techniques and there's so much that we can do, outside of that.
And I like that he explores all of these different techniques and different styles throughout the collection rather than kind of like having one specific style and like just perfecting it and like having it throughout the collection. It's kind of like all of these different, not to say that these aren't perfect, but like, he's just experimenting with different styles and everything.
It's definitely a nice experiment of how good he is with the craft.
Yeah. I agree.
All right. So I guess in the second half, next episode.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Literally Literary, recorded at Power at the Pass and brought to you by Border Senses. This episode, we began our discussion on Brother Sleep by Alo Amparan. If you haven't read it, we hope we inspire you to pick up a copy. Join us on our next episode and follow us on Instagram at literallyliterary.ep and on Twitter at literallylitep.
All right, I'm turning this off.